Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Listeners, let's talk about sex. S-E-X, baby, you and me, on me going down. Now, you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. If you want that, listen up right now. BlueChew.com is here, and it's ready to save your game in the bedroom. That's blue like the color, chew.com. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. The performance is perfect. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever opportunity arises. And buddy, let me tell you, opportunity will arise at any moment's notice. Just last week, I was at the bar talking to this girl. She had these nice long legs, and you know, I kind of thought maybe this could lead somewhere. Luckily, I had a blue chew in my pocket, performed like a stallion all night, went 3, maybe 4 hours. I didn't time myself, but it was right around that mark. Ended up just being a sweaty mess, but thank you to Blue Chew for keeping me lasting all night. I came a couple times, but that's neither here nor there. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first free shipment free when you use our special promo code ARMCHAIR. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code ARMCHAIR to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Attention, past, present, and future MyBookie players. For this week only, MyBookie is offering a risk-free bet on the Bears-Lions game. Simply choose a team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, congratulations. You've got extra holiday spending money. If you lose, congratulations to you as well. MyBookie will give you all of your money back. It's a no-brainer because you literally cannot lose. It's no risk, all gravy. It doesn't matter whether you're an experienced player or a first-time customer, MyBookie welcomes all to come play. So quit waiting around and sign up today. Do you find yourself wanting to sports bet but have lots of questions? Don't sweat it. MyBookie's patient customer service team can walk you through the process, and the best part is if you join now, you'll still have one last shot to take advantage of their incredible sign-up offer. Just log on to mybookie.ag and make your first deposit with promo code CHAIR. That's C-H-A-I-R, CHAIR. And MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your bankroll. And that's on top of the risk-free bet. Let me repeat, that's a guaranteed deposit match and risk-free bet for this week only. So if you're a true football fan, you do not want to let this opportunity pass you by. You simply cannot lose. Make sure you do your part to support your team this season. Hop on the gravy train and get in on the action with MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid.
Boys, it's Jeremy W. Miller.
O'Neal, the rebound. Kevin Ollie brings it up. Throws it across. Miller for three. He backed it in! And the game is tied. We're going to overtime.
Over the rebound for his ninth. 18 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists for James.
Oh, what a block! Chicken! Double time!
Miles Turner!
Yeah!
Welcome to the NBA, my friend!
Turner sets the screen.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Born Ready to Pod podcast.
Welcome to episode 73 of the Born Ready to Pod podcast. We are officially back after taking, I think, about a 2 or 3 week hiatus, holiday season, very busy time. But we're back now, so I'm here as always. My name's Chris Cook. I don't know if I said that yet already anyways. Eric Hawk here with me as well. Hawk, what it do, baby?
Not much. Just had a good holiday season. Cincinnati for New Year's. I'm trying to think of anything else. I got a computer that's pretty nice. So I've just been taking it easy, man, and enjoying some fine basketball. What about you?
Yeah, no real big plans over the holidays. Just glad it's over with. A lot of, you know, traveling to different places and not much relaxing for me. So I am glad it's over with and we can proceed on into this new year, 2020. And speaking of new year, new me, 2020, the big news that we're going to start off the show here with today, not the game yet from Wednesday night where the Pacers got demolished by the Heat. We're going to actually start off with some good news first. Victor Oladipo on Wednesday announced that he will make his season debut on Wednesday, January 29th at home against the Chicago Bulls. Oladipo has been out since he suffered that gruesome knee injury last season on January 23rd against the Raptors. The Pacers right now, as it sits, 23-15 this season without Oladipo, and currently at the sixth seed in the East. That 2-6 range is pretty close as it sits today. Not very many games separate them. So how big is it that there's finally a date out there now where we can expect him to be back on the floor?
You know, it's huge. I speculated post All-Star break, so right before, I think it's going to be a good timing. You know, let him get some games under his belt and then maybe a little break there for the All-Star break, even if it is only a couple days. I think it'll be impactful. And Agnes is saying how good his shot looks and practice and stuff, so it's very exciting. There's no way you cannot be just absolutely ecstatic right now. And we said we wanted to be 500 when he came back, and how many games do we got? If we lose all the games, are we still going to be 500 when he comes back?
I'm not sure how many games there are in between, but we'll be, if you lose all the games, it's going to be close. There are 8 games over 500 right now, so it's going to be close to that number.
Yeah, I don't expect us to lose all those games. We got some winnable games coming up, but yeah, it's very exciting. That news broke kind of out of nowhere, and you know, just a lot going on now.
Yeah, so I think it's, like you said, it's good to have a date now because there was a lot of speculation, Pacers fans, going into the season. When will he be back? Some thought it could be as early as December. A lot of more, you know, I would say realistic fans expected January or February. And to have, you know, an actual date put on it, so these next 2 or 3 weeks is kind of just going to be like his training camp. I think that's a good thing for the team to look forward to. I think they played it smart by not putting a date on it, because let's say that he said he was going to be back by December and then he didn't come back by December. I think fans would be freaking out. Wouldn't you agree? They played it smart there for sure.
Yeah, we've seen that happen before with guys coming back from injuries and they have to push their date back. And then everyone's like, well, what's going on? What's wrong?
Yeah,
and, you know, that puts more pressure on everyone. So I think they handled it well. We've gotten a little impatient, but, I mean, it was a pretty bad injury, and we're just happy to get him back whenever we can.
Yeah, and I think we need to, just like we settled our expectations on when he would get back, I think we need to settle our expectations on the player he will be when he gets back. I mean, as you've seen with these major injuries, it takes some time to get back into the groove of things. So he's not going to come out there against the Bulls on the 29th. And maybe he could, but I don't expect him to drop 30 points in a game winner right away. I don't expect him to be sprinting down the floor. So I think we need to, you know, level out our expectations. It's good that he's coming back with at least 2 months before the playoffs. That's definitely a benefit. Definitely beats him coming back in March and then playing in the playoffs. You know, get the rust through. It could take him a whole year, you know, to get to that level, but at least he'll get some games under his belt before the playoffs starts, and I think that's going to be huge for the team.
Yeah, who do you think's role has changed the most with Oladipo? Because I don't think the bigs, because, you know, he provides a lot more looks at pick and roll, you know, kind of what Brogdon does. So, other than Jeremy Lamb, how do you think, what's going to be the biggest adjustment?
Are you speaking rotation-wise?
rotation-wise, fit-wise, who gets their shots taken? Is there any kind of friction? Like, what are the difficulties you see with him coming back, if any?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I had here on my bullet point list here is projected rotations. So
yeah.
I have I'm belching for some reason. I have my rotation that I would have for when he comes back. So the biggest question mark is we already know who's going to the bench, and that's going to be Jeremy Lamb. So that's not a question mark, but that's a fact. Jeremy Lamb will be playing off the bench, and he'll be the primary sixth man for the team. And so that leaves up to question. Goga's not going to play. His minutes are done. Unless Turner and Sabonis both get in severe foul trouble, his minutes are done. He might come in for a minute here and there, like he is now, but his minutes are done, especially with Oladipo coming back. I'm sorry, you Goga fans out there. But anyways, the biggest question mark is who plays between Aaron Holiday and TJ McConnell. Holiday had those stretch of games where he was starting the Toronto Raptors game. I believe he had 19 and 10 big shots down the stretch. He's had other games where he's hit big shots, double-digit points and assists. But the last, you know, pretty much ever since that Raptors game, maybe a couple games after that, he's played piss poor. He hasn't looked like himself. His shots haven't been falling. I think his confidence has kind of dwindled. So I think when they signed McConnell, they were expecting him to be the third guard, but he's really, I mean, he's outplayed what fans and I think the organization has thought that he could play to this point. So I don't know. I think everything remains the same, and we can talk about McConnell and Holiday here in just a second a little bit more. But my rotation, as I have it, is Brogdon, Oladipo, backcourt, Warren and Sabonis, and then Turner at the center. That's in the starting five. Obviously, that's what it's going to be. And then that second unit, you have that decision between McConnell and Aaron Holiday, and then you're going to play them with Jeremy Lamb, McDermott, and Justin Holiday. I've seen a lot of people say that they expect Justin Holiday to go out of the rotation. That's not happening. Justin Holiday has been great off of the bench for the Pacers this season. He can defend pretty much any position except for the five. He can spot up three. I mean, he's not going to lose minutes. So his brother, I believe, would lose minutes before he does so. What do you think with that question mark regarding McConnell and Holiday, how that plays out there in the second unit? Because those are my thoughts. I think that if Holiday is more talented, that's not up for debate. But McConnell has played so well with the second unit, and if Holiday's playing out of sorts, you know, if they need a spark off the bench, they're definitely going to be going with McConnell in the second unit.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing. I would think that we'd play McConnell in games that mattered, you know, until Holiday shows me consistency, or, you know, maybe throw them both in there for a few minutes, see who's hotter, and then pull the other one for a while. You know, there's ways to go about it, but if I had to guess, I would say McConnell's going to be the one that loses most of the minutes, just because you want to let Holiday get run. He's proved he can score. You need scoring more. But, you know, it's going to be sad to see McConnell's minutes go, because there's no three better words in sports than Timothy John McConnell. But that's purely speculation. I think in games that matter, you'd rather have McConnell out there right now. He's more of a I wouldn't say he's more of a distributor, but, you know, it seems like he's looking to get others involved a little more, even though Holiday is really good at finding assists at times. So they're very similar. Holiday's obviously the better scorer and shooter, so I think that's the way they're going to go and just kind of see how that rotation works out at first. But, you know, I trust McConnell more, honestly, from what I've seen.
Yeah, and I think that is there. You know what you're going to get out of McConnell each night, and he's going to be consistent. He could put up increased stat lines, but he's not going to go out there and lay many eggs, and that's kind of what Holiday has done here lately. You don't know if you're going to get a great game out of him or not. So it's going to be very interesting to see what McMillan does there. I know he favors veteran players, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him going with Holiday at the beginning, and then if Holiday struggles, he just is like, okay, we're done with this, and then McConnell plays the rest of the year. So that's definitely in the cards, because McMillan's kind of got a track record for doing stuff like that. But my other point is, this is kind of, you know, we're in the era of, you know, load management and things like that. I think Kawhi just coined the term knee maintenance or knee management, something like that, in the past week. So new terms are coming out every week in this league. So I think that, you know, having this depth on the roster just extremely benefits this team, something they have lacked in the past. Brogdon has missed games. He's expected to come back Friday night against the Bulls, but he's missed games. I think he's in double digits now over that, maybe a few games, maybe 12 to 13 games he's missed this year. So he's going to get hurt, and this isn't going to be the last time that he misses games. And Oladipo is going to need to get rest. I mean, he's probably not going to play on back-to-backs, and if he does, he might be on a minute restriction. So, you know, a lot of people saying these guys will be out of the rotation. I still expect him to still get plenty of playing time just because they're going to be managing Oladipo's minutes, I assume, at the beginning, and because players will get hurt, and they can afford to give guys nights off even when they're not, you know, that injured. They can afford to say, just take the night off, it's fine. We can play, you know, Holiday more minutes tonight. So I think that's a plus for the team for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks if you're a fan going to the game and you don't get to see, you know, the player you want to see play. But if we're thinking long term, you know, some rest management is definitely needed, especially coming back from an injury like that. You know, Kawhi, you talked about Kawhi. He's just had this knee problem forever. I don't know if, you know, he's milking it a little bit or how much pain he's actually in. We just don't know. But, you know, it seems like the way of thinking in the NBA now is, you know, to wrap these guys up in, you know, a soft blanket and let them miss some time if they need be. And, you know, they're big investments. There's a lot of money in the NBA. You don't want, you know, your star player missing the most important game. So I get it a little bit. But at the same time, you know, the old school way of thinking is just let them go. And, you know, if you play hard, you won't have to worry about injuries. It doesn't, because you just block that out. But, you know, it's the modern NBA. It is what it is. It's not that big of a deal, in my opinion.
Yep, and, you know, I mean, it's a good problem to have. I'd rather have too much depth than no depth at all. So a good problem for McMillan and the coaching staff to have. So my final point here for Oladipo before we get into that Heat game. He's returning 8 games before the All-Star break. You had mentioned that he's going to be coming back close to that. So when he comes back for the Bulls game, they'll have 8 games before they have, you know, an 8 or 9 day break, whatever it is. The Pacers play 7 out of those 8 games at home, which I think is going to be huge for him.
Really? Yeah, that is big.
Yeah, so not much travel. And I think that's definitely – they're gonna be coming off a road trip into that game, so I think that was kind of planned there, you know, to give – you know, not have much changing, and, you know, he's got a solid, you know, 7 games that he plays at home, I think, you know, to get him back in the swing of things. So I think that's going to be very helpful for him, so –
yeah, we bought tickets to that game.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you think? Do you think it's going to be louder than the Lance return? Do you think it's going to be louder than the George return and booing? Well, I think it's going to be the loudest possible. Paul George obviously is returning, but to me, I just think, you know, this time and what this team's done with Adam, you know, even though we've lost some games recently, there's a lot of hope. You know, he's kind of the guy we love more than anybody. So I think Beggar's Life's going to be the place to be that night, 100%.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be – I mean, I definitely think it'll be louder than the Paul George return. I wasn't there for that game, so I don't know exactly. You were there for the Lance game, I believe, and that was pretty electric. I expect it to be a playoff atmosphere. I expect everybody and what I would love, and I saw somebody say this, I don't want him to be in the starting lineup that game. I want him to come off the bench because I feel like he gets a bigger standing ovation coming off the bench in that game than he would if he was announced with the regular starters.
Yeah, I'm going to say Nate gives like Jeremy like 5 minutes run in the first and then, you know, just brings him in right away. So yeah. I can't wait for that. I got goosebumps just thinking about it, man, honestly.
Yeah, an interesting story in that with the tickets there. So the game, or it was announced, Shams had sent out the tweet, whatever it was. And so I had sent it to you guys in the chat. I think Jake had mentioned, I don't have anything going on that day. We should go. So I hurry up and get on to Ticketmaster because I know these things are just going to skyrocket.
Yeah.
And somehow, I mean, we're sitting near midcourt and we got 3 tickets at a discounted price and they're going to give us a koozie, a towel, and a free beer. And all for that at like $75 plus the fee we had to pay for it, which was ridiculous. It was like $20, but still, right now those tickets in that same section are going for $200.
Yeah, so, and we're not selling, those are not for resale.
Yeah, Not for resale. If you are willing to pay $500 per ticket, we would probably reconsider. But maybe it's got to be a significant profit. We're going to have a great night. Hopefully the Pacers don't lay an egg that night. But anyways, speaking of Pacers laying eggs, last night, Pacers versus Heat, Wednesday night, I mean, Pacers absolutely destroyed, 122-108 at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. I say destroyed, 14 points, it doesn't seem like a lot, but I mean, the game was just out of reach the entire time. I think at one point they were down by over 30 points. So the final score was much closer than the actual game. The big news, obviously, Jimmy Butler, TJ Warren getting into it there in the third quarter. They both got so pretty much here's what happens. I'll explain it. You give your thoughts, and then we'll kind of go from there. Butler is attacking the rim. I believe he's coming off of a screen, and then Warren proceeds to grab his arm because Butler had a clear path to the basket, and if he hadn't done that, it would have been an easy dunk. So Warren grabs his arm. Butler overreacts and gets in Warren's face, shoves his chest on him. Warren doesn't move an inch, and they're going back and forth, back and forth. I think Warren called him soft and said, "I'll beat your effing ass." So comments like that are going in there. Jimmy Butler's calling him trash. And so they give double techs, and it comes back. They come back out next possession. Jimmy Butler gets the ball on the wing and completely, not even a basketball play, just elbows. And you know he's just baiting. He's baiting Warren. And Warren was dumb to fall for this. But he absolutely wasn't a basketball play. It was an over-exaggerated elbow. Offensive foul called. Warren, like an idiot, just claps in his face. They get him for the technical, so he's out of the game. And then Jimmy Butler proceeds to blow a kiss as he's getting walking to the locker room. But the refs don't see that somehow, and he stays in the game. So what were your thoughts from the interaction? That's pretty much the breakdown there of what happened in the game. We'll talk about a little bit what happened after the game here in just a second. But about the altercation during the game, what were your overall thoughts?
It made the game more exciting. I will say that at the beginning. But Jimmy Butler just, from my eyes, he looked like a little bitch. And, you know, there's a lot of blame on Warren, too. I mean, he was definitely, you know, antagonizing him on, but I'm going to stand up for my guy a little bit. And Butler, you know, he's not really going to punch. He's not really going to do anything. He cares too much, like, about anything other than actually fighting anybody on the court, I would assume. But from what I saw last night, I don't see how you can say Butler wasn't just doing this on purpose, trying to get under his skin. I don't know what his, you know, motives were, but to me, he came off looking the worst. And then his after-the-game press antics were also suspect, question, weird, you know, I don't know. It made the game more exciting, and you like to see a little bit of that, but at the same time, I thought Butler should have also got his second technical and thrown out of the game. I don't think it just should have been Warren.
Yeah, and my other point here is, so if Jimmy Butler acts like this tough guy, and I don't know much background on him except he went to Marquette and he's played for the Bulls, the Wolves, Sixers, now the Heat. So I don't know his growing up story. Maybe he got in a lot of fights and things like that. I personally, I've never been in a fight before. So I in that situation, Jimmy Butler has never shown us on the court from what we've seen that he's been in a fight, at least not that I know of, that he's actually fought somebody. And so if you're going to talk all that smack that he did, and then after the game do that, and he's never even been in a fight, I mean, it's kind of just, it makes him look like a dumbass. He had every opportunity to do anything he wanted to Warren there. He could have punched him in the face. He could have pushed him. He could have kicked him in the nuts. He could have literally done anything. All it was a chest bump, and he was yelling. And so if you're such a this big, tough guy, and you put off this persona, the ref's like a few feet away from them. Jimmy had all the time in the world to do whatever he wanted. And don't tell me it's because he was being smart and didn't want to get suspended. Who cares if he gets suspended 3 games for a push? If he's that big of a tough guy, he's willing to do it. And so he just waits for the ref to come hold him back. And it's just that typical NBA moment where they're just like, oh, hold me back before I do something. So Jimmy just starts going insane once the ref gets there. So fake tough guy in my eyes for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, Butler's had, he's had an interesting life growing up. He's had some trouble for sure, but I just think at this point in your career, you're kind of past that, aren't you? Like, what could T.J. Warren have said that really set him off? Like, what was his antics? They were beating our ass. I mean, he just must have just wanted to get some self-motivation. It's the only way I could see. And the fake tough guy, he nailed it on the head. I don't think Butler's really about that action at this stage in his career. He's making too much money. He doesn't really care this deeply.
Yeah. So after the game, he does the press conference pretty much to, you know, summarize what he said. He called Warren trash several times. So he told Warren not to be disrespectful, whatever, or he was saying Warren's being disrespectful, and then he proceeds to be disrespectful and call another man trash, another pro basketball player trash. And then he told Warren to watch his mouth. And then he proceeds in the interview to drop the F-bomb and, you know, I don't know what. He said a few other curse words. So he just went off in the interview pretty much just saying that Warren, the Pacers were dumb for putting Warren on him. He can't guard him. He's not on his level. No one's questioning T.J. Warren. He's not on Jimmy Butler's level. That no one is questioning that. But let's remember, Jimmy Butler scored 14 points last night.
that was the funniest part of it all. He had 14. He acted like he just had a career night from the field, which was just weird.
And he does things out there where, you know, he had rebounds and he had several assists. But, I mean, the big thing was that the Heat were making shots. The white guys were making shots. And I apologize if you hear my dogs barking. They're barking at absolutely nothing because they're freaking assholes. But anyways, the biggest thing is the white guys. I mean, they were deadly from three. I think at one point I messaged the blog chat and I said the Heat have made 8 threes. 7 of those threes have came from white guys. So, I mean, they were just hitting their shots. Pacers were playing piss-poor defense. But Jimmy Butler to suggest that, you know, T.J. Warren is some shitty player and doesn't, you know, he didn't say he didn't belong in the league. But when you call another man trash, you're kind of suggesting that. And Warren's been having a great year. So, I mean, people are going to look at Warren and think of Phoenix Warren in this situation. And it's not fair to him. And the other thing is a lot of those players after the game, the Heat players, you know, they were retweeting Jimmy stuff and egging him on, you know, using emojis and stuff that these kids like to do these days. They were egging Jimmy on, pretty much, you know, accepting his stupid behavior. And you didn't hear a peep from the Pacers players. And T.J. Warren actually came out today and was very professional in his interview. So I think it kind of speaks to the point that Jimmy Butler is an immature little bitch. And he fits right in Miami because he plays with a bunch of these young guys.
Yeah, a little bit of aside from this, what do you think about this Heat team as constructed? Because clearly they're good. They're better than people expect. Are they overplaying right now? Because they're 27-10, what, second in the East right now, and they didn't have a guy last night that scored over 20 points, and they absolutely dominated us. So are we officially scared of the Heat? As far as like a playoff against them, I wouldn't say scared, but do you think we could beat the Heat in a playoff series?
I honestly do think that we could, especially getting Brogdon. Brogdon hasn't played against the Heat this year. We lost by 1 point to them in Miami. Last night was a dud. I don't care if we played, you know, the Hawks, which we did lose to them, but give me another bad team in the NBA. We would have lost to them last night. That's how bad we played. We did not play how we've played all season. It was a piss-poor performance from the coaching staff to the players. The only player who showed out was Sabonis. Other than that, no one else had a good game. So, I mean, the Heat, I think, are constructed exactly how, if you're building around Jimmy Butler, they're constructed exactly how they should be. They have a bunch of young guys who, you know, they're tough. No, I wouldn't say they're tough because Myers Leonard blocked us on Twitter. We'll get into that in just a second. But anyways, they are persistent. They can make shots, and they seem to their attitudes and things like that seem to fit a lot more with Jimmy Butler than kind of a passive attitude like Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. So I think that's what's working. He's kind of playing pickup basketball with them right now, and it seems to be working. If it'll work in the playoffs, I don't know. I definitely think they're going to be a top four team for sure, though. And if the Pacers finish in that fifth slot and they finish fourth, I would love to see them in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, look at who else is in those? I mean, I would rather play them than Philly, I feel like. Yeah. excuse me. And I'd rather play them than Boston.
100%.
And who's the other one?
Don't want to play Milwaukee, obviously.
I guess Toronto. I'd rather play them. Toronto, the Siakam, and they have Gasol, and I forget who else didn't play against us.
Ananobi.
So, yeah, I would probably rather play them. It would probably be them and then Toronto.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd rather play Toronto just because of what I've seen from them this year. And, you know, if the Heat were smart, they would make a trade at the deadline for, like, another, you know, legit number two. And, you know, they're a real contender this year if they do that. Just my thought on them. I know they're kind of the surprise of the NBA, or at least one of the surprises that we talked about. But let's get into some of the after-game tweets that you had, because they were legendary last night.
Yeah, so let's get into the Instagram first. Jimmy Butler tweets out a picture of the schedule in March 20th. That's the next time the Heat play the Pacers. It will be in Indy at 7 o'clock, and he circles in blood red, he circles the game. And his caption is, at TJ Warren 1, don't be mad, you can't guard me. We will see what you about in March. And then Draymond Green says, locked in, with 2 exclamation points. Because, of course, Draymond Green has to chime in.
Yeah, if there's any hint of fighting going on in the NBA, Draymond Green has that, you know, Google notification going off immediately.
So, anyways, kind of the Twitter feed here. Excuse me. I don't know if I'm coming down with, like, a cold or something, but I hope not. So, Dwayne Wade tweets, feels like the old Miami Heat and Pacers, and then he puts a, you know, a blushing, smiling emoji. And it's probably, you know, a harmful tweet, but still. The gif he chose to use was the gif where Lance Stephenson scored on him and Dwayne Wade smiled, and that's where it cut off. And so I chose to go to YouTube and get the video to show that Dwayne Wade in that gif made, you know, he tried to make himself look like a, you know, a hardo, but really he cried to the ref. And so he
before, or did you just look it up? And
no, yeah. I knew that before because I remember that game. I believe it was in 2014. It was a March game. That we played against them at home, and I watched it in Las Vegas, and I remember that game, and I remember just being pissed off that Dwayne Wade. I mean, it isn't beneath what Dwayne Wade would do. He would do this 10 times out of 10. That's the type of player he was.
Yeah.
And I just think it's hilarious that he smiles and then, like, literally looks the other way and just starts crying, like, throws his shoulders out. And then right after he sees that, I don't know, it looks like Joey Crawford. It looks like right after he sees Dwayne Wade react that way, he issues Lance with a tech.
Yeah, I mean, it's got over 1,000, like, just retweets and favorites. So you know Dwayne Wade saw that. What do you think his reaction was when he saw that?
He hasn't responded yet. So obviously, you know, he's scared to reply to us. I was actually hoping to get blocked by him. I hope this got us the block. That would be some, you know, grade A podcast stuff if we were blocked by him. So,
you love being blocked. I love it.
I know. So speaking of being blocked, setting the pace, they tweeted out. So Myers Leonard, I was talking about how the Miami players were egging on Jimmy Butler. Myers Leonard quote tweeted the interview that Butler did, and he called him a legend. So setting the pace got a video of when Sabonis just literally manhandles Myers Leonard in the paint. Like, he just, like, it's like a, you know, the Hulk going against, you know, like a toddler, literally in the post. He just easily moves Myers Leonard, and they quote tweeted it and put that video above his legend tweet. And so setting the pace got blocked by Myers Leonard. And then so myself and some other fans on Twitter took it upon themselves to try to get blocked by Leonard as well. And so I sent out the tweet. I sent out the same exact tweet they did, quote tweeted with the video. And within like 2 or 3 hours, we're blocked by Myers Leonard on Twitter, which is just insane. I love it. It brings a smile to my face.
He really does. Just to let you know that, you know, he's looking and he sees it. And he's like, dang, they got me. I got to block him now. I can see how it's instant gratification for sure.
Yeah, and a lot of people on here, I mean, just in responses, they say that Myers Leonard is softer than baby shit. he's soft as shit, and then, you know, just a lot of good stuff, and very fun night on Twitter. Bad game, but a fun night on Twitter. So another thing I did want to point out, and I found this just when I was looking ahead on the schedule, the next week of games for the Pacers: Friday night they play at Chicago, Monday they play versus Philly at home, and then they play next Wednesday at Minnesota, followed by a home game versus Minnesota on Friday. Interesting little tidbit here is all of those teams are former teams that Jimmy Butler has played for.
Yeah, what are the odds? That's got to be like a one in a million shot. We have this whole thing and then that happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's just insane. And I was just looking, so I was putting together the podcast, you know, bullet points like I always do. And I always put the upcoming schedule, and I usually put the next week of games or so. And I was just like, that is absolutely crazy. Friday night playing at Chicago, where he started, Philly, where he played at last year, and then the Timberwolves, where he was there for a year. Just absolutely insane that you get the Jimmy Butler. I mean, we can't escape him. He's going to be following us for the next week.
He's literally like kind of in our head somehow. The schedule makers had this planned all along.
So I think what the Pacers need to do is just maybe in each of these cities they just get some, you know, some tips, things that, you know, got under his skin, and you know, maybe like, you know, his deepest fears, like maybe he's afraid of, you know, like he's got a weird fear or something, and you just gotta expose him. Like you can expose him in the game. You know, Carl Anthony Towns has got to have some shit on him. I mean, he's got to.
Him and Wiggins have a whole list of shit that you could just talk to Butler, I'm sure.
I mean, we got 3 days where we're with the Timberwolves. We might as well fly back with him. This is what we need to do. Wednesday night, we're in Minnesota. We just need to be like, you know what, Timberwolves, steak dinner on the plane, fly back with us to Indy because we got to play Friday night against each other again. You guys stink. Just give us the easy win. And while we're at it, just give us some tips on Jimmy Butler. What makes him scared? What are some things that, you know, get under his skin? And you know, they just need to take advantage of this type of schedule. And I think it would be an absolute slap in the face to Jimmy if they go 4-0.
Yeah, find out about some ex-girlfriends, maybe uncover some kind of money laundering scheme he's up to. There's a lot of ways you can do it, for sure.
And a little more of a serious note, Malcolm Brogdon, he's been out for the last few games. Sore lower back. He's expected to play against Chicago on Friday, knock on wood, but my goodness, it'll be good to have him back in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, you said it earlier, he's got this little history now of being injury prone. Might be a reason Milwaukee didn't re-sign him, just for all that money, but, you know, I still think that can be knocked if you just get healthy and, you know, just play game. I don't think the injury thing's necessary. Gonna follow him. Hopefully he just gets healthy and plays. You know, that's what we're all hoping.
Yep. All right, well, that's all I got here. Opening remarks here on Oladipo. Big news there. Pacers Heat, that dud. And big game against the Bulls. Pacers have lost 6 of their last 9 games, so they need to go on a nice little win streak here before Oladipo comes back. So that's going to wrap this first part of our show up, and next up we have some topics here for Around the Association, so we will be right back. That one was forceful today. Wow. I am impressed. Wow. I might have to do the first few topics by myself. Anyways, this isn't really, I mean, it is a topic, but we won't say much about it, but we have to mention it. Rest in peace to former NBA Commissioner David Stern. Stern was the commissioner from 1984 to 2014. He passed away on January 1st. So now the players are all wearing that black stripe on their jerseys to in memoriam of him for the rest of the year. So anything you would like to add to that except RIP, Mr. Stern?
Just rest easy. That's all. I know him personally, but he did a lot of good things for the league, and he did a lot of sketchy things for the league. He was an impactful person for sure.
Yep. All right, next up, Vince Carter made history on January 4th against the Pacers. Carter, in his 22nd NBA season, made a major milestone by being the first NBA player to appear in four different decades. He's played in the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and now in the 2020s. Carter, his NBA experience is enough to have a college degree. How, crazy of a stat is that?
That's absolutely insane. Obviously, he started off his career as this great player, and he's kind of written a book on how to transition into like that leadership role perfectly, and they're basically just paying him to be a mentor in the locker room, it seems like. When he does get minutes, he's not bad. You know, he's a good passer. He makes the right basketball plays. He's not going to be able to drop 20 every night, obviously, but it obviously hasn't really helped out the Hawks, but in the long term with those young guys, I think it might, you know, and that's kind of what they've hoped. And he still makes a good living. And is he for sure retiring?
Yes, he has announced he will retire at the end of this season.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So will he get one of those commissioner all-star spots, I'm guessing?
That's what a lot of people were talking about. I don't know if they're going to – yeah, I don't know if they'll do that with him or not, but they might as well, you know. What was it last year? It was Dirk and Dwayne Wade.
Yeah, and this year, so, I guarantee it's Carmelo and him, if I had to guess. I don't know who else you'd pick in the West that's retiring or whatever. Yeah. But, you know, it's weird because Melo probably wants to play next year too, so I don't even know if he'd accept it. And I don't know if this is something they're going to do every year, but, you know, for Vince Carter, it seems like they should if they did it for those other two guys.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. He's, 42 now? So, it's amazing that he's played this many seasons, and obviously not at the level that he used to be at. But for, you know, those early 2000 years, he was – when he got traded to the Nets, he was good there for the first couple of seasons he played. So, it's shocking to see he's still in the league, but I could definitely see him after he retires being an assistant coach and then maybe working his way up. That seems like, you know, he enjoys this mentor stuff, so maybe that's something that he's interested in. But it's a great stat and first player to do it, so cool thing to see. Next up, Cavaliers head coach John Beilein pissed off his own players on Wednesday during a film session. During the film session, Beilein suggested in the session that the Cavaliers players were no longer playing like a bunch of thugs. Beilein has since backtracked on the accusation and claims that he meant to say slugs instead. Beilein has called and apologized to each player individually, as it was reported by Woj. The Cavaliers are currently 10-27 and haven't responded well to his college coach mentality. You've seen Kevin Love freaking out on the court here recently. So what do you think about that interesting headline? He tried to say slugs. That's quite a backtrack.
Yeah, well, let's just start at the beginning here. Has there been anybody that's had like a worse transition to the NBA in recent memory? We can obviously agree it's not all his fault. The veterans didn't buy in at all. They're definitely not. But just speaking about Kevin Love, he's been a total bitch about the whole situation. You know, there's a guy like Chris Paul who had a similar thing happen to him. And look where they're at now. The Thunder might actually make the playoffs. He's done a great job there. And then, you know, a guy like Kevin Love, who people generally like across NBA Twitter, across the league. And he's just, to me, it's kind of like, Jesus, man. Like, talk about a 180 on the way people are going to perceive you now. At least me. I kind of think he's just an entitled little pussy because of that. But those are my thoughts. The thug comment, necessarily. It's 2020. Things are taken out of hand all the time. Things, you know, they're not actually how they appear. There's no way he's meant that in like a racist slang term. He's been a head coach at a major college basketball program, getting recruits to go there consistently for years on end in the Big Ten, for God's sakes. I don't think anyone's claiming he's a racist in any way, but you know, that comment gets out and it looks bad to some people and he has to make the apology, and it's just another you know, mark against him and the way he started his career. It's weird. I didn't think Beilein was going to have a lot of success, but this has just gone south quick. And I would be surprised right now if he got to a second year. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. At the rate it's at now and these random stories popping up, you've had players, stories before this that said players aren't, you know, listening to him in the locker room, things like that. And that's obviously the veterans. So I think he probably ends up at another major college program in the next, you know, two or three seasons. Maybe he gets one more year after this. I don't remember how many years they signed him to. Maybe it was four or five. But if you're going to be the Cavaliers and you're going to bring in a college coach who has all this experience with young guys, and you're, you know, you haven't been tanking, but you have these high draft picks, you have Garland, you have Sexton and some other young guys, you have to commit to being that young team. And so what I mean by that is Kevin Love wasn't going to come in. Tristan Thompson isn't going to come in and buy into Beilein's message, which is, you know, playing hard all the time, that college mentality. So, you know, Garland and Sexton, they're fresh out of college, and, you know, they're used to that type of coaching in high school and in college. And so that's really kind of shot himself in the foot. I'm not saying that he hasn't been at fault for some things, but, like, I just think the organization needed to do a better job. If they were bringing in a college guy, they needed to put him in a position to succeed better rather than handing him these veterans like Kevin Love, who has history of, you know, being a wuss, as you had mentioned, and Tristan Thompson, and just being like, get them to buy in, because they're not going to buy in. Kevin Love signed his contract. He made a shit ton of money. He committed to being in Cleveland. He knew what he was in for when he signed the contract. And now he's acting, as you said, like a little bitch. So it's the organization, I think, number one, should take the fall for this, because they didn't put him in a position to succeed when they committed to him. And I guess that's kind of just what you would expect from the Cavaliers. Without LeBron James, they're just a trash organization.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team and an organization that you want a franchise, you want a championship with. You got to have some connection. You got to try to give it a chance, especially you signed a four-year, $120 million deal. I mean, he has 3 years after the season left on the deal. Who wants to pay Kevin Love that much money? Not a contender, because they can't afford it. So it's going to be, if he gets traded, it's going to be to another team that may be a fringe contender, but no one actually would expect to win. So it's mind-boggling, and I don't really know.
Yeah, I think obviously it's the coach who is always, you know, public enemy number one. So the blame's going to go on him. You know, rather than, you know, Kobe Altman and what's the owner's name?
I can't think of it right now.
Dan,
for some reason.
Dan.
Snyder? No.
All right, we're not moving on until we look this up, because it's pissing me off. How do I not remember his name?
God, I can't remember it either. If this was 2014, we would all remember it. Dan Gilbert.
Dan Gilbert, and I apologize. I said owner. I meant governor. He's the governor now.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, I like I said, it just doesn't make much sense to me. The organization hasn't put him in a position to succeed. I think this is just a nitpicking article. Like you said, I don't think he meant anything bad by it whatsoever. He needs to watch what he says, but, you know, it's a stupid article, but he's going to be crucified for it. So, moving on. Celtics guard Kemba Walker was called for two technical fouls against the Spurs on Wednesday night and was ejected for the first time in his career. Walker was issued with a technical after saying, "That was an effing foul, man," after he got completely demolished on a screen by LaMarcus Aldridge, which sent him to the floor. Walker remained cool after that, but then the ref, like, was staring at him and just threw him out for absolutely no reason. By calling him for another technical. So this was the first ejection of his career. So I'm not really necessarily the topic here. You can talk about it, and maybe you've watched the video. But how, I mean, NBA officials, and especially with the Pacers game last night, a couple incidents there just in the same night. I mean, how much are they in their feelings you know, recently. You had Isaiah Thomas from a few weeks ago getting thrown out after making contact from the ref. It just seems like some of them just have a way too quick of a trigger to throw guys out for no reason. And Kimba, with, you know, that track record, he's never been thrown out before. It just seems like they think the game sometimes – they just ruin the experience, I guess. I don't know what I'm trying to say there, but they ruin the game experience by making it about them.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I watched the play. Kimba definitely got fouled. Legal screen, no doubt. Got shoved to the ground almost by Aldridge. And then he yelled at the ref a little bit. He gave him his mind. He gave him, you know, what he thought was well. And all I thought within his rules, you know, he's kind of a star player. You're allowed to do that a little bit. I think maybe a tech was warranted, but the double tech toss out was absolutely astonishing to me. I didn't understand it either, but that's just the way it is. You got the human element in it. The refs are human. They take things personal at times. Maybe he said something that we didn't hear. You just never really know. And I don't think it necessarily ruins the game. This doesn't happen that often. It seems like it's happened more lately. But refs are going to ref. Everybody hates them. It's the most unrewarding job in the world. They get paid decently, I guess. But as a guy who refed third through sixth grade basketball this past weekend, I can tell you it's a thankless job, you know. And what do? You got to try to control the game. He might have thought it was getting out of hand. It's not that big of a story as far as the status of the refs. I think they've been fair in the games we've had recently. I don't think anyone's out to get anybody. So that's just the way I think about it. I think we just move on.
Yeah, so speaking of your ref days, have you had any parents, you know, light your ass up yet?
Honestly, only one game I refed where it wasn't bad. Most of these people realize, all right, this is third and fourth grade basketball. There's no reason to even really pay attention half the time. Calling travels don't even happen, so we can't really get mad at the ref. But once you get into fifth and sixth grade basketball, it's a little more physical. Parents are a little more into it. The games are a little tighter. And when the games are tight, you pretty much – what I do is I just call it by the book most of the time, you know. So that's how I kind of deal with it. But when parents chirp, you kind of just – I look at them, I'm like, listen – this is a Saturday league. We're playing on a side court. Like, this isn't – we're not even in high school basketball. Like, this isn't anything to freak out about. Everyone take a chill pill. He fouled him. I saw it. I'm the one with the whistle. You have to obey me. And then they shut up. You just got to put them in their place.
Yeah. Some great tips there. You might have to write a referee book one day.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
All right, last topic here, and then we'll wrap up the show. I'm going to highlight some things here because there's a lot of names. So I know I'm going to list off a lot of names. It's going to be a lot to listen to, but I'm just delivering news here. The second return of NBA fan votes came out on Thursday for the All-Star Game starters. The fans are voting for both captains and starters. So here are some of the results. Top 10 from each different position. The West front court. From top to bottom, this is how they're currently ranked. I don't have the votes on here. LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kawhi, Paul George, Jokic, Towns, Porzingis, Carmelo, Brandon Ingram, and Dwight Howard. The West guards, which they're going to pick two from, is Luka, James Harden, Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, Westbrook, Alex Caruso, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, D'Angelo Russell, and Ja Morant. And then in the East, the front court, they're going to pick three guys from this section. They have Giannis, Embiid, Siakam, Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, Taco Fall, Adebayo, Gordon Hayward, Domantas Sabonis as ninth, and Andre Drummond. And then the guard positions in the East, two from this section, Trae Young, Kyrie, Kemba, D. Rose, Zach LaVine, Jaylen Brown, Ben Simmons, Beal, and Fred VanVleet. A lot of those guys are, you know, names that you would expect to hear, but fans have been voting on Twitter and on the app and things like that. What do you make of some of those names on that list? I think the only ones that really, when I name off all those good players, is Taco Fall and Caruso, really.
Yeah, I think that fan vote's 1/4 of the actual vote, so that never really matters. There's always guys up there. I remember when Zaza Pachulia was leading the fan vote when the Warriors had all the other guys making the All-Star team. So that was – it's comical. It gets things stirring. It's good to have a little controversy on there, and it's probably legit. I mean, people love those guys. So there's nothing you can really say. If people are going to vote ironically, they're going to vote ironically. It's not the end-all be-all of who actually makes the All-Star game. I just hope we can get some Pacers representation on there. I think Sabonis 100% deserves to be there. It's going to be hard because, you know, Bam's having a good season too. I think they're battling for one of the very few spots in the East to actually open for grabs. So I think Sabonis should. And if Pacers fans want to see representation, you should definitely vote because that takes some account.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the way the starters are currently set up by their rankings, I mean, you still have a solid team starting. I mean, there's nobody in the top 10 on each, or excuse me, top 5 on each conference that's a, you know, an outlier. It's later on in those rankings, and there's no way Sabonis, I feel like, gets to the starters anyway. He's way too far back. He doesn't have a chance. So the starters will be revealed January 24th. So there's a couple more weeks of that, but then the reserves, they are selected by the head coaches, and those are revealed a week later on the 31st. So that's when I would expect. And Brogdon, I think he's missed too many games to make it now. He was definitely on pace to be an All-Star, but since he's missed all these games, I don't think he's going to qualify. So I think for the Pacers, their only hope is Sabonis, and I think he's going to make it.
Yeah, there's no way he will miss. They will be the snub, and there's always, at least the past 2 or 3 years, there's been one or two injuries that open up spots, too. You hate to see it, but it's always happened. So at the end of the day, there's no doubt in my mind he's going to be in Chicago for the All-Star weekend.
Yeah, and Embiid as well. We had just talked about a tweet that was sent out about his finger. He's mulling his options. He might have surgery. I don't know how long the recovery time is. So he's currently a starter, but that could change if you know, he decides to get surgery and he's out for a while. So I don't know what the timetable is on that, but like you said, some of these players will get knocked out because of injury. Knock on wood, but that's just how it goes. So anyways, that's all I got for around the association, but I know for sure before we wrap up and say our goodbyes to our loyal listeners that you would like to talk about your beloved Jeopardy tournament.
Yeah, the GOAT tournament. It's been pretty good. I mean, the first episode, I think, was amazing. They came out of the gate and they didn't miss a question in the first round. I think Reuter might have missed a double Jeopardy, but that's classic Reuter, am I right? He's been missing double Jeopardies left and right. Last night was definitely Jeopardy James's show. He kind of dominated. And, you know, Ken kept it close, but you can't miss the final double. You can't miss the final Jeopardy question, that's for sure. So shout out to Jeopardy James. It's 1-1. The first 1-3 wins, so they're at least going to Saturday. And I had to guess, I would say Brad doesn't get any the way he's played, but you know, I don't think you should necessarily hate on Brad, because who cares? He's won more money in game show history than anyone ever has in the world, and when this is over, he will still be that, because every contestant gets at least $250,000. So he's got that locked up either way. I think it's James's to lose, but you know, Ken Jennings is right there. So you know, they have this little weird rapport in the game, and it's like they know each other pretty well, and these jokes. It's a different Jeopardy than normal, and for me, it's hit a home run so far. I've enjoyed watching it.
Yeah, I will be tuning in tonight. I missed the second night because of the Pacers game, and so I think I recorded it. I don't know if I'll go back and watch it, but anyways, I'm a Ken Jennings guy. You know, I grew up on Jennings, you know, going on that 74, whatever it was, win streak, 74 game win streak. And so I would always go, and I mean, I never really watched Jeopardy, but back when I was 13 or 14 years old, when he did that, I would watch. And so I would religiously watch at 7:30 for him to come on and completely dominate. So I didn't really watch Jeopardy James. I knew about him. I knew he became an internet sensation, you know, completely dominating. I think it was last year. I guess I know he's a really smart guy. My heart tells me to root for Ken, but I think that Jeopardy James ultimately pulls this out.
They all got these weird quirks about them too. You can tell that you're not that smart without being a little socially awkward. So it's kind of funny just watching them interact on stage, and it's been a delight. In all this time of trouble, things going on all over the world, Jeopardy's brought us together, in my opinion. So I love it.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So that's going to wrap up episode 73 of the podcast, and we should be back to our regular schedule now since the holidays are gone. But you know, we got to take a break here and there, re-energize and get ready to deliver one of the best Pacers podcasts out there for you guys. So enjoy the rest of your week, your weekends, and hopefully we get a Pacers win this weekend against the Bulls. And we will be back next week with more content for you guys. So we'll see you guys later.
Yep, Wendell Carter out a couple weeks as well. So take that with you. He will not be playing.
Yep, so there's some bad news for the Bulls, good news for the Pacers. So see you guys later.
See ya.